Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, Chapter 1, Text 8. Tasmat purai vas viha papa niskrito. Tasmat purai vas vihi. Tasmat purai vas viha papa. Try one more time. Tasmat purai vas viha papa niskrito. Tasmat pura vas viha papa niskrito. Yate tamrityo avipadyat atmana. Dosasya drishtva. Excuse me. Three strikes, I'm out, right? That's the second time it happened. Okay. Dosasya drishva guru lagavam yata. Bisha chikitseta rajam nidanavat. Bisha chikitseta rujam nidanivit. Tasmat pura vas viha papa niskrito. Yate tamrityo avipadya tatmana. Dosasya drishva guru lagavam yata. Bishak Chikitseta rujam nidanavit. And once more for good luck. Tasmat purai vas viha papa niskrito. Yate tamrityo avipadya tatmana. Dosasya drishva guru lagavam yata. Chikitseta rujam nidanavit. Others. Oh, okay. Tasmat purai vashviha papa niskrito. Ladies? Tasmat, therefore, pura, before, eva, indeed, ashu, very quickly, iha, in this life, papaniskrito, to become free from the reaction of sinful activities, yateta, one should endeavor, mrityo, death, abhipadyata, not troubled by disease and old age, atmana, with a body, dosasya, of the sinful activities, drishtva, estimating, guru lagavam, the heaviness or lightness, yataha, just like, bishak, a physician, chikitseta, would treat, rujam, of disease, nidanavit, one who is expert in diagnosis. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, before one's next death comes, as long as one's body is strong enough, one should quickly adopt the process of atonement according to Shastra. Otherwise, one's time will be lost, and the reactions of his sins will increase. As an expert physician diagnoses and treats a disease according to its gravity, one should undergo atonement according to the severity of one's sins. Purport. The Dharma Shastras, like the Manusamhita, prescribe that a man who has committed murder should be hanged and his own life sacrificed in atonement. Previously, this system was followed all over the world. But since people are becoming atheists, they are stopping capital punishment. This is not wise. Herein it is said that a physician who knows how to diagnose a disease prescribes medicine accordingly. If the disease is very serious, the medicine must be strong. The weight of a murderer's sin is very great, and therefore, according to Manusamhita, a murderer must be killed. By killing a murderer, the government shows mercy to him, because if a murderer is not killed in this life, he will be killed and forced to suffer many times in future lives. Since people do not know about the next life and the intricate workings of nature, they manufacture their own laws. But they should properly consult the established injunctions of the Shastras and act accordingly. In India, even today, the Hindu community often takes advice from expert scholars regarding how to counteract sinful activities. In Christianity also, there is a process of confession and atonement. Therefore, atonement is required, and atonement must be undergone according to the gravity of one's sinful activities. Om Aginatam Ananda Shad, Ginan Ginashalakaya, Chakshur and Militam Yena, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha, Shri Chaitanam and Obishtam, Stapitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So Prabhupada says here, but because people are becoming atheists, they are stopping capital punishment. So basically, the reason, they don't believe in it. Atheists don't believe in these things. They don't believe that the murderer, they don't believe in even that there's such a thing as sinful activity. You know, it's just, this is like an imagination. Just like the other day we were hearing, Prabhupada was lecturing and he was explaining how when the people who are sinful, they go to the holy place, they leave their sinful activities there, they leave the contamination or reactions there or whatever, they leave it there. The holy place becomes contaminated. And then when the great devotees come, that purifies the holy place again. Tirtani Kurvanti, like that. So an atheist will hear that and just say, this is just fairy stories. You know, this is just like imagination. This doesn't match up with reality at all in any way, shape, or form whatsoever. And they just dismiss it. This is, you know, the atheistic attitude towards the Shastras. You know, the Dharma Shastras or just the Shastras in general. Okay. Let's just put that in the parking lot. When somebody's heart stops beating, the next thing that happens is they stop breathing. And after they stop breathing, within 10 seconds, the brain stops functioning. Like Kasinath, his brain is just about to stop functioning because he's going to stop. No, just kidding. Sorry about that, Kasi. The brain stops functioning. In other words, if they put the electrocephalogram onto the brain, there's no activity, you know. And then you start experiencing what's called cell death. One by one, the cells just start dying. And the longer that condition exists for, the more cells die, and the more the process is irreversible. And unless somebody comes along and bumps you in the chest, sticks a needle in your arm with, I forget the name of the chemical, something, Neo, whatever it is, some, you know, pharmaceutical name, and they put some pads to your chest and give you two big electric shocks, human life in that body is finished. But sometimes that does happen. Sometimes, even within up to an hour, if they attempt this resuscitation, you know, they can bring people back. Because they're actually dead. You know, if they didn't attempt that, that's what's called death. But sometimes they do this process and they're actually successful in getting people to come back, be alive again, after being quote unquote dead for anywhere from 10 seconds up to even up to as much as an hour. And most of these people, 90% of these people who come back after having that experience, after having been what's considered clinically dead, because once you're heart stops beating and you stop breathing and your brain ceases to function, you are dead. You see? So 90% of those people, when they come back, they're glad to be back. They don't remember anything. You know, it's no special story to tell. But statistically, this is 10% of those people have some interesting experience to relate. And it goes something like this. That, you know, well, what I experienced, I experienced that I was above my body and I was watching the whole thing. And the next thing I knew, I was being sucked up into a black tunnel. And there was just blackness and I was just being pulled upwards. But then, shortly thereafter, I saw some little pin of light at the end of the tunnel, you know. And then I was being pulled up towards that light and it was getting wider and brighter. And then I got totally pulled up into that, I entered into this realm of light. And I was greeted by departed loved ones, and I had a sense of that I was being communicated to in a telepathic way by my Creator. And then I experienced my whole life flashing before my face, and I saw like a review, a panoramic review of my everything that happened to me in my life, and I remembered like feeling very guilty about some things, and you know, sorry about it, whatever, like that. And then I was asked if I was ready to leave, and well, I wasn't. Next thing I knew, I was back in my body. Something like that. 10% of them describe something similar to that. Maybe not all those features, but some of those features. So once again, the atheistic response to that would be, yeah, very nice. More fairy stories. More nice fantasy. But interestingly enough, some of those people, that group, and that 10%.
they're able to present verifiable details of things that were going on, you know, back down on Earth here. In other words, some of them, when they come back, after, you know, including what they included within that story that I just described, they're able to say that, well, actually, this doctor, when, you know, when I was in that period where I was just hovering, watching my body, that this doctor did this, and this doctor said that, and then the nurse did this, and then, you know, they're actually able to give details of exactly what happened in the procedure. And actually, the procedure is not the same for every person they try to do this resuscitation to. It varies from patient to patient, depending upon the circumstances. And these people are able to present verifiable details that correspond to the medical records, and they correspond to what the medical professionals themselves say. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what happened. This person is saying it. How are they doing that? Because, you know, according to medical science, when your brain stops working, when there's no, you know, when the chart's flat, you ain't experiencing nothing. You're out. You're gone. You know? Because according to mainstream medical science, consciousness comes about at a mature stage of biological development. And when that biological development, that stage of biological, whatever it is, maturity is, breaks down, then there's no more consciousness. The consciousness is dependent upon the brain. See? So if there's no brain working, then there's no consciousness. So, you know, according to mainstream science, that's something that couldn't happen. But it's happening. You know, at least they're getting, you know, these, we have reliable people. Well, it doesn't matter if they're reliable or not. They're presenting information that they can verify. They're saying, this is what happened. You know, once again, their charts are flat. There's no brain waves or anything. Yet they come back and they're saying, this XYZ, ABC, XYZ is what happened. And they're all, yes, it's completely correct. So, mainstream science this can't happen, but it's happening. To say something is happening is just another way of saying that, well, it's reality. So, but it's not matching up with what mainstream science is saying. So, who's not matching up with reality? You know, and there's the accusation of the atheist scientist or atheist whatever, you know, is these descriptions in your shastras, they don't match up with reality. Well, you know, here's something that's happening, it's reality. So to say something's happening is the same as saying it's reality, and it's not matching up with, you know, what the mainstream science is having to say. So somebody might ask the question, well, does it match up with what your scriptures have to say? Well, as a matter of fact, it does, you know, because the scriptures, the Veda scriptures say that avinasa tu tadvidi, yena sarvam idam tatam, vinasyam avyasyasya nakaschit kartamasi. Know that which pervades the entire body is indestructible. Indestructible. No one can destroy the imperishable soul. And then that's one of about 20 verses in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita where that same point is, Krishna makes that same point in so many different words again and again and again and again and again. That the soul is indestructible and consciousness is the, you know, the energy of the soul. And so it, you know, matches up very nicely that the consciousness is not dependent upon the material brain. You know, actually it's the other way around. But, and somebody might, okay, just, they might go as far as to saying, yeah, okay, but that's pretty vague. I mean, it's not vague, it's pretty general, though. It's not actually, you know, talking about exactly what you just described about these people dying and coming back and, you know, describing things. And it's, you know, it's not exactly that. Well, okay, let's go to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Is there anything that's a more exact description of what I was just, you know, describing? Well, as a matter of fact, there is. And as a matter of fact, we're right in that part of the Bhagavatam. And as a matter of fact, we're just about to hear that story. Ajamil. Because Ajamil, the story of Ajamil is Ajamil. And we actually had a book that we printed at one point that was, you know, we had for mass distribution. It was called Second Chance. And I think the subtitle was a story of a near-death experience, right? Second Chance. So Ajamil, this is an example of a near-death experience. It's described, I just was reading it last night, it was describing how he was just dying, in the process of dying. It doesn't mention if his heart had stopped beating, or if his he had stopped breathing, or if his, you know, there was no more further brain activity. The Bhagavatam's not interested in getting into this kind of this clinical detail. You know, it's, you know, it has a different purpose in just presenting this story. But it did mention that the Yamadutas were just about to snatch his soul from his heart. That there is a translation, you know, to that effect, and Prabhupada describes how the soul is from the heart, and that's the seat of consciousness and like that. So, you know, that was happening. And he didn't have all the classical, he didn't, his near-death experience didn't have all the classical features of some of the ones that are being described today, like, you know, at least there's no mention in the Bhagavatam of him seeing his body from the point above his body, or, you know, being pulled up into a black tunnel or any of that other stuff I described. But he did see the Yamadutas, and he did, you know, hear them. He got very frightened by them, and just as they was, as I said, snatching his soul from his body and getting ready to just pull him back down to, you know, the Pitri Loka where Yamaraj is, so he could be kind of sentenced and dispatched to the appropriate hell, which he was qualified for. He very fortunately, the Vishnu Dutas intervened, and they challenged the Yamadutas. What are you doing? And they said, basically, in so many words, they said, well, what do you mean, what are we doing? He's a sinful person. Yama just sent us here to, you know, take him and bring him back. We're the Yamadutas. We're the servants of Yamaraj. And they said, well, and then they asked him, actually, it was an incredible conversation. We're going to hear it just in the upcoming days. A lot of times we think of the Yamadutas as just some ugly thugs. But when you actually read the conversation, they may have been ugly, but they weren't stupid. They were really, they're brilliant. You hear that, because the Yamadutas presented, like they asked him, shot about 5 or 6 questions at him, you know, philosophical questions. And the Yamadutas gave good answers. They knew the philosophy. You know, as I said, they may have been ugly, but they were fixed up, and at least they knew the philosophy. So then the Vishnu Dutas sort of, you know, superseded their arguments. They brought in higher principles that, you know, the Yamadutas weren't aware of, higher religious principles, such as that he was chanting the holy names. Ah, you forgot that, or you missed that one. And that goes supersedes all these different points you were making as to why he's sinful and should be punished. So, and you know, Ajami was observing all this, and then finally the Yamadutas had to bow out. You know, they were outmatched, you know. They couldn't, they were defeated in argument, and they could also somehow, I think, intuitively could understand that if it came down to, you know, what's it called? Fighting it out like that, they wouldn't win either. So they were defeated, basically, and they had to, you know, just leave. And the Jamal came back to life at that point. And it's described here. I'll just read the... So, you know, he returned to life at that point, and this was his... This was his statement. He says, was this a dream I saw? Or was it reality? I saw fearsome men with ropes in their hands coming to arrest me and drag me away. Where have they gone? So it was so, like, extraordinary what he experienced. He wasn't even sure if it was for real or not, because, you know, it was just like, what the heck was that all about, you know? And I was like, wow. But at the same time, he took it seriously, and what he did was, right after that, you know, as I said, he came back to life, and it's described that he went to... you know, because of that moment's association, yes, it says, because of a moment's association with devotees, and in parentheses it says the Vishnu Dutas, Ajamil detached himself from the material conception of life with determination. Thus freed from all material attraction, he immediately started for Hardwar. And in Hardwar, Ajamil took shelter at a Vishnu temple where he executed the process of bhakti yoga. He controlled his senses and fully applied his mind in the service of the Lord. So, you know, Ajamil had a near-death experience. Sometimes it's called an NDE. But more important than that is that he had an OBE. He had an OBE. Now, those of you who are familiar with the jargon, you might say, wait a second, an NDE stands for near-death experience, And OBE, well, that stands for out-of-body experience. Well, that's the same thing. So what are you talking about, Brigupati? Well, no, I'm talking OBE, I mean as original body experience. He had an original body experience. Following his NDE, he had an OBE. Now, it's following his near-death experience. He had an OBE, or an original body experience. And now we're going to hear just about that. It says here, when his intelligence and mind were fixed upon the form of the Lord, the Brahmana, Ajamila, once again saw before him four celestial persons. Oh, here they come again. There they are. He could understand that they were those he had seen previously, and thus he offered them his obeisances by bowing down before them. The Vishnudutas return. Upon seeing the Vishnudutas, Ajamila gave up his material body at Hardwar on the bank of the Ganges. He regained his original spiritual body, which was a body appropriate for an associate of the Lord. Accompanied by the order carriers of Lord Vishnu, Ajamila boarded an airplane made of gold. Passing through the airways, he went directly to the abode of Lord Vishnu, the husband of the goddess of fortune. So he got his spiritual body back, and he went back to Godhead. So on that point of matching up with reality, we match up with reality. At least this is one example, and you only can talk so long in a class, so I'm just going to keep it to this one example. But there are many other examples of where the Vedic scriptures match up with reality, when you really look at it carefully, and the scientific worldview or the predominant Western religious worldview doesn't. And we have nothing to be intimidated about. We have the absolute truth, and we should be very confident of that, and we should do like what Prabhupada said, preach with the spiritual masters pleased by bold and enthusiastic preaching. So, being very confident that we have the absolute truth, and what's being described in these books is, completely matches up with reality when you really, study it with intelligence and carefully. We should take every opportunity to try to present this to other people. And that's one point. And another point is we're hearing about how Ajamila went back to Godhead, and also, so we should simultaneously, we should feel very confident, encouraged, optimistic, or the opposite of despair. What's the word for the opposite of despair? Amal Bhakti, you're very good with synonyms and antonyms. And hopeful. Thank you. Yeah, there it is. Hopeful. Very hopeful, because Ajamila, he went back to Godhead. He was very sinful. This was a sinful person. I mean, he was a nice guy to start off with. Everybody knows the story. He was a dutiful Brahmin, and he was married. Well, but he really lost it. And at a young age, it's described that he was a young man when he became, fell down with that prostitute and cohabitated with her and had many, many children with her. And he was maintaining her by all sorts of nefarious means, robbing people. He became a dacoit. Dacoit means like a highway robber. And cheating people and, performing all sorts of sinful activities to maintain this partner. And not only that, it's also mentioned in the description of, or he's lamenting after when he, after his near-death experience, and when he, came to his senses, he was lamenting. And one of the things that's mentioned is he had elderly parents, and his parents were totally dependent upon him for maintaining them, and Ajamila totally neglected their maintenance after when he fell down like that. So he really lost it big time, so to speak. But Krishna is so grateful, Krishna is so merciful that he gave him the opportunity to name his son Narayan and chant the holy name at the time of death. And eventually that led to him being able to go back to Godhead at the end of that lifetime. So point being that if somebody as who, you know, got messed up as badly as the Jhana messed up. I won't say, you know, he was, as I said, he started off as a dutiful Brahmin, more or less a devotee. Brahmins generally worship at least the Shalagram Shila, you know, of Narayan, like that. So, and he messed up very badly, but still, Krishna's so grateful for any little service rendered. And we hear this, you know, so many that he gave Ajamil the chance to go back to Godhead, you know, at the end of the lifetime. So what to speak of us, you know, I mean, we're also coming from very sinful backgrounds, but we're trying now, and, you know, if the devotee is sincerely following the regulative principles and chanting his rounds and trying to be fully engaged in devotional service, there's really good hope of going back to God at the end of this lifetime. That was Prabhupada said as much. And, you know, if even somebody like Ajamil is going to get to go back to God, if Krishna is so kind and merciful and grateful, you know, for, that he let Ajamil go back to Godhead, what to speak of devotees who are properly following the instruction of their spiritual master, they have a very good chance. I mean, Prabhupada, you know, actually, more than just a chance. I mean, you're going to go back to Godhead. It's, Prabhupada said, it's, I was just watching one of those Remembering Prabhupada videos that Mayapur puts on after, at the end of the class, and it was Dina Bandhu speaking, and he was describing how Prabhupada here in, he's here in Los Angeles, I think it was like 1968, it was early, and he was saying, Prabhupada was saying, you know, so if you just follow the rules and regulations, the regulative principles given to you by a spiritual master, and chant your 16 rounds and be engaged in devotional service, at the end of this lifetime, you'll go back to Godhead. He said, I guarantee it. And then there was a pause, he was silent. He looked around, Kundadina Bandhu, he looked around the room at all the devotees, and then he went again and he said, I guarantee it. So, what time is it? Oh, perfect. Okay, I'll stop there. Anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah, Archie DeBru, thank you.
You gave a new spin on OBE, original body experience, but even based on the ordinary understanding, out-of-body experience, and OBE doesn't necessarily have to be an NDE. There are many people who claim that they can have OBEs whenever they want to. As a matter of fact, as a youngster, I was reading these books by Lobsang Rampa, and that's one of the things that attracted me to this to seek spiritually, because I was thinking, wow, that would be great. You could just, whenever you want, just leave your body and travel all over. You know, they call it astral travel. You can go wherever you want and see all kinds of places and stuff. So it was attractive to me to kind of pursue that. So an OBE doesn't have to be an NDE. You don't have to be a near-death experience to leave your body. Many people seek that and claim that they can do it at will.
Yeah. And, okay, yeah. And we can handle that, too. I mean, just like off the top of my head, there's that story of Usha and Aniruddha in the Krishna book. You know, Usha had a dream. No, just very quickly. Anyway, so her friend, you know, she dreamed that she was with some young boy who she was very much attracted to, and she woke up saying, oh, my lover, you know, like that. So her friend came, Chitraleka, and she said, hey, what's going on? You know, you haven't been with, you're here living in the palace, and you haven't met any boys, you haven't been associating with any boys. So she said, oh, and then she told him I had this dream, and she said, well, describe him. And she started describing, and she was a mystic yogini. And she was, I think, whose daughter she was, but she just basically just did like what you said. She had an out-of-body experience at will, and she went to where Aniruddha was, and the mystic power she used was described as, I think, Vihayasa, and she just transported him, mystically transported him back to the inner chambers of the palace where Usha was residing. And that's just one example of it off the top of my head. But, yeah, you know, these things are easily accommodated within the philosophical, you know, the framework of the Vedic literatures, where, you know, modern science is, once again, it just have to be like, this is just fairy stories. And so who's matching up with reality? We're matching up with reality, you know? Because that's not... Anybody else have any comments, questions? Amal Bhaktapu, got a microphone for him?
Thank you again for a very wonderful class. I just wanted to make mention of one extremely important point. You did make reference to it to some degree. I'd just like to overemphasize that point. And that is that how Krishna appreciates any degree, any amount of devotional service that one performs, notwithstanding the fact that even after that time, one may deteriorate or disintegrate into sinful activities for a very long time. What the Lord did is that, remembering the service that Ajamil had performed in his younger days, he enabled him to attract these Yamadutas by the fact that it was the Lord Krishna who caused Ajamil to name his little son Narayan and to become attached to his little son Narayan, so that at the final point of death he would be helplessly crying out the Lord's name, which would be his salvation. It's mentioned in some of the purports, that. So that is a very clear, very great indication of how the Lord never forgets his devotee's devotional service. No, even if that devotee should fall down to a very low position. But that should not give us license to go ahead and do what Ajamil did, thinking that, well, yeah, all I have to do is have somebody nearby to give me the Lord's name when I'm at the point of death. When one tries to outfox or out-trick the Lord, he makes sure that there is nobody around to help you. In other words, it's like the violation of the seventh principle of chanting of the holy name. If you think that you can commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name, go ahead. The effect of the sin will be doubled. You will not eradicate it. So we can never try to think we can outfox or out-trick or outdo the Lord. He's a million steps ahead of us. Better to follow everything. Hare Krishna.
Jai, thank you. Anybody else? Anything they want to add or question? Okay, thank you very much. Kuntraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Okay, so you're not today, is it?